All right, welcome to this audio exclusive episode of the Colin and Samir Show. Today, it's just me, Samir, and I'm going to be joined by the CEO of Spotr, Aaron Debevoss. Now, I called Aaron to talk about some news that broke a few weeks ago, which is that Amazon invested in Spotr. And with that investment, the effort is to bring more opportunities to creators to create shows for Amazon Prime Video and to open up opportunities for creators and commerce on Amazon. Now, this whole year, Colin and I have been talking about this convergence of creators and Hollywood. And throughout the year, I think the thing that we've realized the most is that what's needed is a bridge between these two worlds. And this deal feels representative of how that bridge will be built. So for a company like Amazon, it's a no-brainer to start working with creators. The reality is that Amazon, alongside every streamer and major retailer, is in the attention business. So figuring out how to work with creators who are capturing the majority of the attention on the internet, it's incredibly important. Now, the one thing that I feel like a lot of people ask themselves is, why would creators want to work with streamers? Well, I think that has to do with how creators monetize in the long term. So to date, the creator economy has been built on the foundation of advertising. But what's interesting about a streamer like Amazon Prime Video is that it's based on subscription. Now, I've seen a few different numbers when it comes to Prime Video subscribers, but as far as I know, it's in the hundreds of millions of households. If I'm Amazon, what's important to me is having content available on Prime Video that is culturally relevant, because that will increase the lifespan of my subscribers. It'll make them happier and enjoy the content, and it might bring new subscribers from creator audiences. And if I'm a creator, I might be able to find completely new audience with these hundreds of millions of Prime Video subscribers. But what's also nice is that the monetization model is based in subscription, which typically means that there's more budget available to take bigger swings. A great example of this with Amazon is their partnership with Mr. Beast to create Beast Games, which is a massive swing. It's going to be one of the biggest reality shows ever created. Now, to bring it back to Spotr's role in all of this, they were intimately involved in that deal between Amazon Prime and Mr. Beast. Spotr works with a large roster of top creators. They traditionally have worked with these creators through the context of giving them capital in exchange for licensing their back catalog of videos. That capital business has grown. They've deployed over $950 million to creators. More recently, they launched Spotr Studio, which is a software that supports creators in coming up with ideas, titles, and thumbnails for YouTube. So with all this, Spotr can support Amazon and making data-informed decisions on which creators to bring over to Prime Video. Now, Amazon is already a part of the creator economy. They obviously own Twitch, but they really haven't done many deals in the context of YouTube creators. Amazon also recently rolled their ad-supported streaming service, Freevee, into Prime Video. So as we look into the future with Amazon, we have ad-supported content, subscription-supported content, and commerce opportunities. In my opinion, those are the primary three ways that creators will continue to make money in the future of the creator economy. Now, I talk to Aaron all the time about the future of the creator economy. He's a really fun guy to talk to about this, not only because of where he sits as the CEO of Spotr, but also because he's one of those rare individuals who's been in the creator economy for almost two decades. In this conversation, we talk about the deal with Amazon. We talk about what this is going to mean for creators. And we also explore what a future could look like in a world where Amazon is more involved in the creator economy. Now, if you listen to the show, you're familiar with Spotr. They've been sponsoring and supporting the show for the past 2 years. But this conversation with Aaron was done in the context of coverage for the published press. If you don't know what the published press is and you like this show, then I definitely think you should check out the published press. It's our newsletter, and we send it out 3 times a week. It has the top stories in the creator economy, and we do exclusive interviews like this one. All right, I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation between myself and the CEO of Spotr, Aaron Debevoss. Can you take me into some of the meetings with Amazon, and like, did they know they wanted to be involved with creators? What were some of those conversations leading up to the investment?
I think it was enlightening for both sides, honestly, that what the desires were quite different than what, let's say, the current state is, right? So there's absolutely a no-brainer for Amazon to want to be involved in the creator ecosystem that exists today outside of Amazon, right? The question is, it's so daunting to even them, right? That they go, well, where do we start, right? And that conversation we had to have with them of where do you start was really interesting, because they'd say, well, there's TikTok, there's YouTube, we have Twitch, right? Internally, there's so many different creators. And we go, well, they weren't sure that 22 minute plus content was succeeding on YouTube. I don't even think they knew that, right? So when we can enlighten them with data that makes the transition between where they are today and where they want to be a little bit simpler, those meetings went really, really well, right? So for example, we would bring up five or six names of creators like Kniger Dion, we brought up. They don't know who that is, right? And then we would share the stats, right? We would share what she really wants to become or desires. And then they really look at it and go, wow, this almost sounds like a creator we would absolutely work with, except for she's already successful and has episodic series that are out there, right? So I think it was breaking down those kind of, hey, we've never been exposed to this environment. What are the data points that can make us feel really comfortable, like almost like we're still in our own world? That was really, really helpful. The other side was like, hey, we could tell that the way that they were talking to creators was very different than maybe creators were expecting them to be, what the creators would really want to talk about. So think of it as, hey, in traditional entertainment, right, they're talking about treatments and pilots and what's the budget of the show and how many episodes can you do? And yeah, that's not like too foreign for a creator, but it's not necessarily the everyday life that a creator has on YouTube, right? There's a lot more experimentation on YouTube, right? There's a lot more immediate feedback from audiences on YouTube. And I think that bringing those two worlds together is going to be a really interesting part of this relationship, because, you know, we could look at a world that says, hey, should every show that could go on Amazon first be piloted on YouTube, right? And in some cases, I think Amazon would think, yeah, that's great, I have evidence, right? In other cases, they were like, don't want to release the secret that there's a really cool show that they can develop that maybe should be specifically only on Amazon. And so it's going to be interesting to see this navigate, like how the two worlds collide and make sure that they can speak the language that creators are comfortable with and vice versa. And I think that's our job, to work with creators like you to ultimately understand, like, hey, what is the message you want to get across to Amazon? And frankly, us to kind of move out of the way and let you guys have that direct dialogue with the right people at Amazon.
The interplay of those two platforms will be really interesting. Like, it'll be interesting to see with Beast Games, you know, seeing what it looks and feels like to have, you know, an episode drop on YouTube and then jump over to Prime Video. Do you feel like there's a lot of gaps in the traditional media world that has created those complications for creators to actually get their content seen? Like, if we start with the content world, there's like a natural jump. Okay, here's a creator who's obviously has a massive audience. It's been a really like rocky experience in the past for creators to make that jump to, you know, traditional platforms or work with traditional studios.
Yeah.
You know, to me, this feels like there needs to be some expert handholding to go from creator to the streamer. Does that feel representative of what's happening here on the content side?
I don't know if you agree, but I would think that 5 years ago, the thought was, oh, it's a... what creators are doing on YouTube or any other kind of social video platform is a stepping stone to do something bigger, right? And I think that conversation has changed dramatically in the last 5 years, where no, the foundation of why a creator should be able to expand their brand on and kind of launch other content formats is because of what they're doing on the major platforms today. Right. So it's not a stepping stone from YouTube to now you've made it on Amazon. It's now Amazon looks at what you've done and really thinks there's a gap in the market for content like yours. Right. And it's more of an expansion of your brand rather than, okay, they're moving on and they're going to be more in traditional media versus new media. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that does make sense. I think like that's something that since we started on YouTube, we always felt that, but it took actually a lot longer than I think I anticipated. Yeah. You know, there was movies that would go to the box office and have mixed results. You know, creators would try and make movies, but a lot of times what was happening was creators were seen as talent and they would get paired with a traditional system. It's like Lily Singh is a great example, right? a little late with Lily Singh. It was kind of like Lily's talent and she's going to get produced in a traditional system. But I think the substantial difference now is also our cohort of creators has become sophisticated enough to have their own production companies and actually go, hey, we can actually make this stuff. So we can partner with you directly. There doesn't have to be, you know, maybe there does need some production company in the middle to make sure things are up to standard. Mostly the biggest YouTube companies can now produce the content for these platforms. So it's a cleaner exchange.
It's so funny that you say that because I was recently at a conference where still the conversation was, hey, you're going to do a scripted show or it's going to be UGC. Right. And you're sitting there going, and they could be referring to someone as large as, you know, Mr. Beast or Dude Perfect or whatever. And you're going, no. There's no difference between the two. There's a difference in necessarily like, hey, the format at which you're using to reach the right audience on the right platform. Right. So it's going to be highly unlikely or nearly impossible to say that a 10-minute episodic series is going to work really well on Prime Video. Right, you're going to need some more length to it, right? But those worlds have collided, as you and I have talked about in the past. It's like you look at the length of content on YouTube over the last 10 years, and now it's gone from, you know, what 5-minute videos used to dominate to that would never be successful today versus a 22-minute video that's being mostly consumed on television, right?
I mean, Michelle Carr's last video was like an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I think that's actually like shocking the traditional entertainment world, right? Yeah. It's almost like they still don't believe it, even though it's right there in your face. And that's where it's like a really good point, Samir, because maybe this transition, it's gotten to the point where the transition is not that meaningful from a production perspective, mm-hmm. to your point, right? So now when you go in and present, let's say, to the people that are choosing what shows to put on or not put on Prime or what's a fund and not funds, there's a less of a hurdle, right, to actually greenlight a show than there used to be.
And they're episodic. I mean, we've talked about Kinigra before, you and I, and obviously she came on our show and talked about what she's producing, but those are like episodic, recurring characters, formats, shows. So it looks and feels the same. The biggest difference is on YouTube, obviously the content is free and ad-backed, whereas on Prime Video, we're talking about a subscription. Obviously with Prime, like, I mean, how many Prime subscribers are there? Or like ballpark?
I don't know globally. I know that the penetration in the US is like massive, right? And I think YouTube is generally obviously much bigger, but it's still globally, you know, hundreds of millions.
Yeah. So it would be really interesting. Like for me, it'd be really interesting to have a platform like Prime Video be the house for more premium content from YouTube creators. Or maybe it's not even more premium. Maybe it's just a different version. How do you, like, have you guys talked about that, of what that means for creators to create for Prime Video, what that type of, you know, content looks like, or what types of series can go over there?
Yeah, we definitely have. And I think the way it's positioned, at least the way we talked about the investment and made sure that it was worthwhile for us to explore this, it was really the opportunity for creators to expand their brands. So there's going to be new audience, right, on Amazon Prime Video that the creators have yet to be exposed to, and vice versa, right? That there's going to be audience that's not yet engaged with Prime Video that's highly engaged with creators on YouTube. And so if those two worlds can mix, I think it's obviously a win-win situation for Amazon and the creator. The really cool thing about that for the creator is that those people that they're engaging with now on Amazon are really used to shopping on Amazon.
Sure.
Right. So you can see an immediate opportunity as a show becomes more and more successful to all of a sudden introduce products, commerce, right? Where on YouTube, that's a little bit more difficult, right? They're not necessarily used to shopping on YouTube. So I think that kind of will open up a bunch of doors, but it does look like there are certain kind of genres that are working, right? Obviously, like you mentioned, scripted, right? It is not a genre, but overall versus unscripted is working really well. I think there's exploration for unscripted for sure. And then animated content, adult animation, as we see with Mr. Beast, is like these games, right? So game show type stuff. But I think it's really going to be an exploration. We're going to look at the audiences that live on YouTube and for these individual creators, and Amazon's going to look at what's working and where are their gaps. And we're going to try to marry those two data sets.
One thing that would get me excited, like if Colin and I were able to pitch something and create something with Amazon Prime, the thing that would get me excited is that we actually can focus a lot more on the craft of creating, and have a partner who can focus on distribution to the audience. Like, of course, it still has to be good enough to bring an audience over to watch it. But when you work with a traditional, you know, media company or streamer, they're also, you know, have ways to distribute your content to the right audience. And I think that, you know, YouTube does that, but we play a massive role as distributors in our YouTube content. And I think there's a lot of creative talent that could use support in distribution because they want to spend more of the time spending, you know, on the craft of storytelling or putting together the content. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, I mean, it makes total sense because we had a meeting today with Amazon about this issue, right? Which is, it's definitely not a situation where they're going to be able to experiment the way that people do on YouTube, right? Where it's like,
totally
launch 150 new shows.
Yeah.
And, right? So the shows that they believe will resonate with their audience will be promoted, right? And so it's going to be easier to gain audience on Amazon if you're selected to actually post if you're selected to create a series on Amazon, right? And then they're going to want to make sure that you try to bring your audience over as well. So I do think that that's kind of a unique opportunity here where not all of the pressure is going to be put on the individual creator, right? Or creator team to do everything under the sun. And I think that that's been really, for those that have worked with Amazon, really exciting because there are marketing teams there. Yeah. There are the people that can help you navigate the other areas.
And I think it's been like amazing to, you know, beat the drum of like, we're creators. We're not just, you know, on camera talent, we're directors, we're producers, we're salespeople, we're all these things. But as I look down the future of the creator economy, the question is like, can we be all of that forever? You know, whether that means building companies and people around us to take off and chop off some of those jobs and do those jobs that we're taking on. But I think like you think about athletes, when they're able to focus on the game, they're able to excel. Like if Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan owned the team and were worried about ticket sales on the day of the game, that changes the dynamics, right?
For sure.
Of like how many people are in the seats. So I think about that often around like, you know, there's a lot of creators that I meet who I think would be excellent in that seat of making compelling content, but maybe don't have the mind of monetization, distribution, you know, marketing, the holistic picture. I hope that there's a future in the direction for those storytellers to find distribution and get their work seen.
Yeah, I mean, and no question, it's so overwhelming to think that that creators have to do all those things, right? And you go, and you do look at the athletes and say, wow, they can spend so much time on everything from their health, right, to practice, to all the things that will make them a better player, right? I do think that's going to get easier over time, certain parts of it, right? So if you look at kind of, to your point, the how-to part of the job is going to get easier and easier, right? How can I dub this video in, you know, 15 different languages is going to be a lot, like, trivial, right? But that it does come down to, hey, yeah, you still have to worry about all the other pieces, right? And I hope that Spotter can play a role in trying to solve some of that for creators. I mean, if I look at kind of like the absolute power of Spotter Studio in enabling someone to come up with 50 titles, right, in seconds, right, and have those titles be data informed, right? Being generated because certain patterns are working on YouTube, then you don't have to do the research and you don't have to actually write out all 50 titles, but you can be the creative person that's choosing which ones to work, yeah, to use for your video. And so I do think that Spotter, with kind of capital, with software, with partnerships like Amazon, can actually make that job a little bit easier. Although it's opening up more opportunity, right? So then you have to ask yourself, like, hey, do I want to be creating a show on Amazon and a show on YouTube?
Do you feel like some of the other streamers are going to follow suit in this context of like a Disney Plus, for example? Like, are they, hey, we need to engage with creators too. We also want a company like Spotter to support us in that process. Do you imagine that other streamers and other traditional companies are going to come to Spotter as well for similar reasons?
Well, I think before we talk about even Spotter, I think they have to be thinking how do we work with creators we're not currently working with, right? And even if they think about the creators they currently work with, a lot of them are trying to say, hey, how do I do what the creators on YouTube are doing? Or how do I do what other creators on TikTok are doing? I do think it's a really valuable thing that if streamers work with us and we continue to be kind of listening to creators all the time as a company, Spotter, that we will absolutely help translate kind of the needs of creators that are on YouTube and on TikTok to translate that to people like that are working at Disney. Otherwise, I just worry that the language barrier, right, or the understanding of each other is going to be so new world, old world that it may just never actually connect on a more scalable basis, which could be fine, by the way, which could lead to massive disruption, right? Mm-hmm. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But if Disney does want to play in that game, it can't just be one-offs, right? Sure. I think that's super dangerous.
I'm not sure if you've seen some of these stories that this year, some recent box office numbers of creators making movies. It's been a bit of a the whole year feels like it's all been about creators taking on Hollywood. I mean, we wrote a big piece about it. We did a whole newspaper about it. We've been talking about a ton of, like, this came straight out of the Spotter Summit, but creators are becoming Hollywood faster than Hollywood is becoming creators. The numbers at the box office more recently, I saw this post that got sent to me a bunch on LinkedIn of, like, the Ryan's World movie. They spent like $15 million and it netted, you know, $600,000 at the box office, something in that world. The Sam and Colby movie made like just shy of $2 million at the box office, which to me didn't feel like that felt like a win for Sam and Colby, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They own the content. They can do whatever they want with it now.
Right.
But it still feels like we're in a world where, like, traditional and digital doesn't know the answer of how they engage with each other.
It does feel that way. Right. And I think that the expectations of the two worlds are completely different, right? Mm. Is that, I guess, what we're saying. Like, why is it that something will get greenlit? And by the way, even saying greenlit, right? Like, something will get greenlit versus not. It's going to be this issue of, like, what was expected historically versus what is actually possible today. And that's probably why someone like a Jimmy, Mr. Beast gets, the opportunity to do what he's doing with Amazon. But I think that the key will be, as people start to transition, or as companies start to transition, realizing, hey, it's not the one-off, but it's the ongoing engagement that you have with a specific audience that will deliver the value opportunity that you're seeking. Mm. That will become more normal for creators not to have massive box office hits, right?
Yeah.
The problem with box office is it's a one-off, like one-time experience. Yeah, so you have to nail it. And that's just not what the world is seeking anymore.
I also think there's some miscalculations there of, like, you know, Ryan's World solves a problem, I think, in households for parents. Right. It's like safe programming for, it buys you time as a parent. So if you follow that trajectory, does it make sense for the parent to go to the movies to watch Ryan's World with their kids?
That is such a great point. Right. That is such a great point for sure.
Yeah. So I thought about that of, like, I think there's probably, like you said, it might be too simple to look at just big numbers and go, that'll work. You know, you have to understand what is the value of this channel and how does it operate in the broader culture? How do you see the monetization evolving over the next, let's say, decade in the creator economy? Obviously, in the context of Amazon, you're talking about commerce. A lot of creators are moving into, you know, this multi-channel monetization approach where, yes, you have advertising and brand partnerships, but, you know, you look at a Mark Rober who, you know, was doing deals with KiwiCo at one point and then launches Crunch Labs, right? It's like, I remember him saying to me, I think he said this on our show, he was like, if a brand is renewing with you, you might want to think about launching that product. I thought that was kind of a funny note of if it's, because they're not going to give you the data, but if it's working, then your audience is reacting to this product. Maybe you should think about launching your own version of this if you have that in you. So I'm just curious if you have like a sense or just thoughts around how monetization evolves, if it's still true in a decade that advertising is the primary way that most creators make their money.
Yeah, I mean, I think that first off, that's a separate question, whether advertising would be the most dominant way that creators can make their money. Because to your point, if they're so good at it, then they should own more of what they're marketing, right? And I do, just using Amazon as an example, right? We looked at the world of sellers, right, that are selling on Amazon and said, wow, Amazon has treated their sellers like customers, given them all these sorts of tools to be able to market their own brands and to be successful on Amazon. I think that's gonna now transition to, our creators going to start being treated as customers, right? From a service perspective, to say, well, they have the connection to their audiences, so they should be able to sell products more so than someone that just has a bunch of money to spend on marketing. I think there's an interesting conversation that goes on around the monetization opportunities for creators, which is still around, well, do I need control over my audience, or do I need to own my audience or not own my audience? Like if it's on YouTube, I don't have a direct connection to my audience as much as if it were a community of people that I had their email addresses and were talking to me every day on Discord, right? You'd say, I actually think, and probably creators feel more so today than that, yes, your YouTube audience, you do have a huge amount of influence over what they're doing, what they're interested in, what they'll buy. And so whether it's educational classes, whether it's kind of experiences that you're sharing, or it's actually selling a product, a hard product, I think creators are gonna have way more monetization opportunities going forward. And it's gonna be a direct relationship with the audience. So you're not necessarily gonna need shelf space somewhere in a store, right? That you're now fighting for between, you know, 10 different creators that can get into Target, right? Or 15 creators that get enough marketing to get into Target. So I think it's going to be a lot easier to monetize, and it won't be, you depend on a brand to keep paying you a check every month.
And do you anticipate, like in the context of Amazon, that there's obviously data around like, hey, there's white space here. Maybe there's a great creator fit there. Hey, let's do a launch. You know, of like, hey, this item, there's a lot of white space for this item on Amazon. Here's a creator with a lot of influence. Let's put these two things together and, you know, almost like not co-branded, but like, you know, some level of deeper engagement there between Amazon and the creators and product development and brand development.
I totally think that that will happen. Whether Amazon believes that they're going to do is a totally different story, right? But you would say the focus that Amazon had, right, was to say, hey, I want to give my consumers infinite choice. That's why they started supporting sellers the way they did, right? It was like, there's no way that the Amazon as a company could produce enough product to satisfy everybody's needs. So I might as well help all sorts of other people that can make those products be successful. I do think that, like, to your point, like one of the biggest opportunities is identifying true white space, right? And then realizing that what people want to buy, I think even YouTube used these words to us, was what feels familiar but is new, right? And so there's some kind of connective tissue that allows creators to explore white space in a way that's, I don't want to say less risky, but a little bit more informed, right?
It's data informed.
Yeah, a little more informed.
Yeah. And that's kind of how we operate in general now, right? Like we make choices on content that are data informed. But it's interesting because, again, like I come back to this concept of distribution. Like now when I walk into grocery stores around the US or like gas stations around the US. It's just, there's Creator products everywhere. You can't not see Prime Feastables. I was standing in a gas station in Texas, and there was Prime Feastables, Joyride, and Mr. Beast Swarms toys in front of me.
But you got to love that, right?
I was like, "What? This is incredible." But retail has served as true distribution for creators, right?
Yes.
Like that is true distribution to get in all those places that are highly foot trafficked when you're walking out of a gas station, and you can just grab a Feastables on the way out, or grab Joyride, or you look at the fridges and they're stocked with Prime. That's back to what I was saying in the content perspective of like, you focus on this craft and you get help on distribution that's happening in retail. Right. It's interesting to think about it in the context of Amazon.
As a consumer, you kind of look at it and go, "Oh my God, they've made it now." But even though it's just like
the
product showing up on a gas station shelf, right?
But there's something when like your favorite digital creator jumps off the screen and is a part of your day-to-day life. It's like, you want to talk about engagement. That's very anecdotal. You can't, there's no like metric around that, but there's something that feels different, right?
Well, for sure. Because we've talked about it. People are, my son's collecting Prime empty wine bottles, right? You're like, this is not going to happen with Gatorade, right? I mean, so... There's for sure that is a completely different experience. I think there is a moment in time right now where the most popular creators are getting those opportunities, and they're far and few between. When we look at like the entire ecosystem of retail and say how many products are in there from creators, it's very low. Whereas I think in the near future, I'm talking maybe, I would say 5 years, right? It's going to be very hard to believe that there's a brand on a shelf that doesn't have some sort of connection, direct connection to an audience through video or through social, right? Yeah. Whereas that is totally true today for most products, they do not have that. The future of commerce, the future of entertainment, the future of advertising is going to be creator-led. Thought comes in, right? It's just too important to have that direct connection to the audience to be able to have someone else who has no connection to the audience try to compete with you.
Sure.
And so I don't think it's going to be only a few creators show up in your home. Right.
It's interesting to think about the pairing of Amazon merchants with creators, right? Or like someone who's, "Hey, I got a good product. It's doing all right. It's like, it's a quality product, has good reviews, but it's not really jumping in distribution. Can I pair with a creator?" And now, I think that's, Ryan has talked about that with Joyride, right? Like that's a pre-existing product brand where they have the product figured out, but they need support and distribution and they need a face.
To your point before, which is how many of the things as a creator do you want to worry about, right? Do you want to worry about the product design and the if it's a edible, like what does it taste like, right? What does it show up as for the customer? But I do think that you have to imagine those channels are going to get easier and easier. Do you really need to partner with someone else that created it?
Sure.
Because it's going to get easier to create. It's going to cost a lot less. And it goes back to like, I think there have been a number of people that are still talking about like, well, the cost of production is going to go to zero. Like, I think it's pretty close in terms of the, not zero in terms of your time, right? Or the people that you need to make great product, but is the cost of producing products going to be so minimal, right, that yes, the distribution outlets may be really critical, but you don't really need to partner with another company that's built a product.
What does success look like for you, in a few years from now, like, with the Amazon partnership, like what does it mean that it went well and that it's successful or that it's going well?
It's funny. I it's a great question. I think it may be different for them than it is for Spotter. But the two will collide, right? Which is, I think a really successful outcome for Amazon would be that a number of shows got launched and were successful, and a number of products got launched and were successful. That's just a win overall. So I think that's a win for both for creators and for Amazon and for Spotter, right? I think the bigger win will be unlocking what we've been talking about, which is, wait, are creators more critical to the
commerce world and to the content world that's beyond YouTube than just a few hits at the here and there. And that's my goal in discovery, which is how do we kind of build something scalable where we can identify the white space for individual creators at scale that makes sense for them. And so my view would be if somehow in our software, it would come up in our software that we're going to help you ideate what products would really work for your audience and be good at it, be like the world, one of the world's best at doing that. That would be much bigger success for us and for creators than just we were able to introduce a few to do a few things. Right. And I think that Amazon would ultimately realize that that's a bigger success as well. Right. So, but I think it's going to take time and we'll have to experiment. And so success looks different to different people, I guess.